Hi, you guys. Welcome back. This is Richard Sachs on Lost Arts Radio, and we're honored and privileged to have Carrie Rivera back visiting us after Autism Month, which was last month. And we're going to talk about developments in that, something we've been watching for quite a few years now, and find out what the state of awareness is in people in general and parents and families in particular about where autism comes from, what it really is about, and how to fix it in as many cases as possible, which is, there's a lot of that that can be done. So welcome, Carrie, and this will be a fun discussion. I'm glad you're back.
Well, thank you for having me back. And I really do feel like I was just saying right before we started, I think that there's a lot of craziness going on in the world, like a lot. And I think also there's a lot of people being outed. You know, I think more people are aware. Mm-hmm. I find that to be the case, especially when I'm talking to someone like my mom and she's like telling me things that she's seeing, you know, people are, she says, well, my mother's a, she's all her life, she's read the obituaries. I'm not really sure why, but
okay.
I guess her mother read them and then she, I don't know. Anyway, whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is, she's like, Carrie, they used to be 3 pages and now there's like 6 to 8 pages of obituaries. Like, that's not just a little coincidence for somebody who's spent the last 80 years reading obituaries. Like, right. Something's up.
Yeah, so she understands what's up pretty much?
She understands what's up, sure. Well, I mean, there's only really one thing that's happened since this started. It's only been since late 2021, like the last, I would say, 6 months, something like this.
Right. The real acceleration of that program.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to get into that in some depth. So let's start before I forget. What is Autism Month? We want to include the people who have no idea what we're talking about.
Thank you.
A couple of words about autism, why it matters, and what that program is about, Autism Month.
Thank you. Well, actually, April is Autism Awareness Month, which, I mean, people, they kind of sit on the fence of like how they feel about Autism Speaks and that group and things like that, because I think most of the people in my world are much more proactive about healing and recovering from autism, because right. Autism is a label given to our vaccine injured children, which I believe actually just, you know, lets the big pharma off the hook once again for what's happened to our children.
It lets them off the hook if people do not realize where it's coming from.
Well, some of us unfortunately realize it all too late, because, you know, when you go from your OBGYN to your pediatrician, there is no like in between where they start to fill you in on actually what really children really do need, because you start off life without knowing much about children when you have a family, some of us.
Right, right, right. So what do people run into? Most of them aren't prepared or know much about autism if they're going to have a vaccine-injured child. What do they notice? And typically, how does the sequence go? What happens?
What typically happens, and this is just kind of a standard because there are other children that have other things, but typically right. They're getting their inoculations and everything is going along pretty okay. Like, there's usually the first 12 months, you wouldn't really notice anything necessarily. And usually sometime between like 11, 12 months and 2 years is where there becomes this huge drop off. But of course, right now there's 72 vaccines in the childhood schedule internationally for children under the age of 2. Mm-hmm. 72 vaccines under the age of 2. And then people say to me, well, my kid only got like 8 vaccines. In every one of those needles, there can be anywhere between 5 and 10 vaccines now.
Wow. So what do they notice after 12 months?
Usually, well, what happened with my son, who was definitely vaccine injured because he was sharp as a tack. He was born sharp as a tack. And he had this very, very, very amazing 12, because I have an older son. So I was able to compare I have 2 children, the first and the last. And the second one is the one with the autism.
Okay.
But I noticed, you know, he was really so sharp, the, you know, pointing at things and engaged and always looking for things to get into. And, you know, he crawled on time. He walked on time. He had a lot of words at the age of 1. Like, he used to love to do flashcards. They were these baby brainy flashcards, and mm-hmm. you know, bear and star and all these kind of things. So he had a lot of words, where his brother at that age didn't have that many words, which is kind of common in bilingual homes. They usually talk a little bit later, even though they will have words. But Patrick had words sooner than my first son. And of course, he had many more words by a year. So he was really on target to just be exceptional. He was always exceptional.
And your first son somehow got through the challenges without being noticeably affected by the damage, right?
Yeah, it's not so noticeable unless you sit and talk with him for a little while. Then maybe you might notice that he had some issues with it too. But there's kind of two different kids. And you start to, well, in my life, because I've spent 18 years dealing with the autism spectrum, you right. start to realize that there are certain issues that usually the siblings have some issues, and they might not be so noticeable because they're, you know, they're not, they don't fall really on the autism spectrum, but they right. can have issues as well.
So the resistance varies from individual to individual.
It does. But I still see families I work with and they have 2 and 3 kids with autism. So there's wow. definitely, and they said there's like a 10% genetic component, because if it was 100% genetic component, we wouldn't be able to have an epidemic. And this is an epidemic at this point.
Yeah. 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 So back to what you notice typically at 12 months or something, more or less.
They start losing eye contact. They're less interested in the social movements and, you know, all the stuff that babies are into, and they stop pointing. That's one of the first things that they stop doing, is pointing and showing. And then usually starts things like diarrhea or constipation or a combination of the two, night wakings, okay. crying. And then, of course, if they had speech, they start to lose the speech.
And then the parent takes them to the doctor, I guess, right?
Well, in my case, for example, I didn't really know what was going on. It was just, it was like, you know, the terrible twos started early was kind of what everybody was thinking.
Okay, okay.
And it was not really so... so shocking. You know, I'd go to the pediatrician here and there, but I was going to the health department for the shots because the grandmother of my kids, her best friend was a high-level nurse from one of the health departments, and she always told me it was important because at the time I lived in Mexico, and I lived in a beach town, so we would lose electric. We'd have these brownouts, you know, things like that. So she said it's really better to go there because they have generator backups uh-huh. on the refrigerators instead of going to your pediatrician. Which I'm not okay. even sure, like, do they have a different batch that goes to the public, that goes to the private sector? I don't even know, Richard. It's just so creepy.
Yeah, I don't know either. So typically, do parents wait and think like you did, that it must be normal and they're just going through some difficulty and they don't go to the doctor soon?
Well, especially back in the day, because I'm talking about 20 years ago. My son will be 22 this year. So this is like happening 21 years ago. So there was just, there really wasn't the prevalence of autism, and certainly not in where I lived. There were just, I didn't know anybody with a child with autism when my child was diagnosed.
What's the difference in prevalence between 20 years ago and now?
I think it's 1 in 30. And it used to be 1 in 66, between 1 in 66 and 1 in 200, something
like
that.
So it's about doubled in 20 years.
And actually exponentially it's risen. I think it's even more than that. You know, okay. like 1 in 30 versus 1 in 200. I forget what this exponential rate of growth is, but it's something terrible. And my dear friend Dr. Stephanie Sennett from MIT did the statistics on these numbers, and she said that by the time 2032, and she said this back about 6-7 years ago at an Autism One conference, she said by 2032, every other child born will be diagnosed with autism in their lifetime.
One in two.
Every other person born, right.
Okay. Wow.
Which is staggering. And because it really takes a village to raise a child with autism. And that's right. if you have the finances to do it. It's frighteningly expensive.
And that's compounded by the fact that other conditions are increasing as well at the same time.
Of course, absolutely. Because yeah. I also see a lot of type 1 diabetes, yeah. A lot of ADHD, Addison's disease, like a lot of different,
right.
what would be injuries. I believe these are
vaccines. Remember that the control group project correlated vaccines with all these different health conditions, and found out that in the totally unvaccinated people, the right. percentage of diabetes is zero.
Well, if you look at the Amish, or there was another, the Amish is one group that you can look at because they are not vaccinated and they don't right. have autism in their society. And autism, then there's also a pediatric practice out of Chicago, somewhere outside of Chicago. And they have like mostly homeschooled and non-vaccinated children in their practice. And they also don't have autism. So,
right, right. So you didn't notice what it was right away. What made you finally realize what was happening?
Well, at first, when things were going pretty wrong, you know, different people would say, like, what's wrong with Patrick? And I'd be like, oh, okay. They told me, you know, and when I would go to his baby visits or whatever to the pediatrician, she would tell me, he's bilingual home, or he's spoiled, you know, this kind of lots of different excuses, everything but what was actually happening. So then I kind of got tired of asking people what was wrong with my son. And then I had my children at a school. And the director of the school one day said to me, a friend of mine's in town and she's a psychologist and I would like her to see your kid. So it was like a Friday afternoon. So I said, okay, we'll come back. And so there was just like, you know, my two kids. And of course, one of them just running in circles, squealing like a dolphin and flapping. And the other one was just sort of sitting there next to me. And then she started to ask me about Patrick. She was very focused on Patrick. And I was thinking, well, my other child wasn't really doing well in school. But of course, his brother wasn't sleeping through the night. So there was a lot of screaming going on in the middle of the night because he would scream and cry and wake up. And, you know, nobody was really sleeping in the house that well by that point because he was really sick. But you don't know what's happening. You don't know that your child is sick just because everyone says he's fine, you know, but he's not fine.
And for you at that point, you were not aware of autism in general.
Not at all. I had heard that Sylvester Stallone had a child with autism. That was the only thing that I had ever heard of, the only person I'd ever heard of in my lifetime. And one of my friends from grammar school babysat somebody who had autism. But again, I never went with her, so I didn't really know what that was. There's nothing really to correlate with my life.
Right.
And then that her name was Mimi. And I'm really grateful for her because she had the guts to tell me what was going on. I think that's a lot of problems that most of us have, is that just nobody really wants to tell you the bad news because it's really bad news.
And that was the psychologist that did that.
She wasn't. And I asked her, I said, well, what's the chance that you, she asked me, does he always run in circles? Does he always, you know, flap? And does he always squeal like a dolphin?
Tell
and
people I said, what flapping is, because not everybody knows.
This sort of thing. So they're kind of running and flapping their hands by their sides. It looks like they're trying to fly, but it's obviously some sort of stimuli that they do. But
it's some kind of nervous feeling that they're getting.
And they all do this, like not all of them, I shouldn't say, but there are a lot of the kids have, you know, some of these same behaviors like my son had right when he was diagnosed.
Right.
And so she asked me if he did those things, because he was doing them. And she says, does he always do that? And I said, yeah. And then she said, well, I think your son has autism. And I said, what's the chance that you're wrong? And she said, well, I did my postgraduate in autism. So it was kind of highly unlikely.
Right.
And I asked her, you know, well, what happens? Because I knew he was born fine and he had this period of typical development. So it had only been the last, like, you know, year and a half, 2 years that things were not going so well.
Yeah.
And so I asked her, I said, well, was there anything I can do? And she said, well, there's these psychologists here in this town. And it was like, you know, I lived in a beach town, you know, there was nobody there that could help me. And so she goes, if you want, you know, you can come tomorrow and I'll introduce you to these women. So I went there and the women, they were just freaked out. They were just like looking and, you know, they had no idea what they were doing either. And I wasn't sure if she was actually trying to get like a little business together where she was going to try to train these people.
These were parents of other autistic kids.
No, they were psychologists.
They were psychologists. Okay.
So this psychologist from the States who gave me the diagnosis, she was introducing me to people that could help me do maybe therapies with my son to get him better or something of this nature.
Okay. So there just happened to be a bunch of psychologists in
your town. Well, there were two. And again, this was like when I saw them and then this other one from the States was trying to tell me that these two who were totally freaked out were going to help me. I realized I was absolutely in the wrong place. So then I got out of Dodge, and this is really before internet took off. So this is, you know, it's like 2004. Okay. It was actually March 12, 2004 that he was diagnosed with autism. Never forget it. Worst day of my life, because you know, your life has changed forever. You just don't know what or how, but it's changed forever.
Right. So you quickly found out what autism was.
It took about 2 weeks before I really had put the whole thing together, because I really didn't know what happened. Again, now I'm now sleepless for 2 years. So I'm still not really okay. And my kid's not well. So everything is, you know, as a mother, it's just a total train wreck. Then trying to keep my life together, because I have an older son who's 4 years older than the 3.5-year-old that just got diagnosed, who had his activities after school that he had to go here and there. And, you know, and I was the one that drove the kids all the time. So it was really a heavy cross. But I started to look for other people. So immediately when I came home that night, the other moms of some of the friends of my son, it was a Friday night, they were picking up their kids. And I was totally destroyed when I got home. And so I said, the one mom said to me, oh, I have a book about diet for autism and ADHD. And I was like, oh, great. Can you lend it to me? So she lent me the book and I quickly read it. And it basically talked about a diet without gluten and casein. Okay. So I said, okay, house, we're going on a diet. That, my son, he only, by that point, by 3.5 years old, he only ate everything with wheat and dairy. He had self-selected the worst foods for him. Huh, and if he didn't get those, Richard, the crying and screaming and drooling and throwing himself on the floor would be something nobody could tolerate. And there's like arguing and negotiating on top of the screaming child. So he really had such a poor diet. The only thing that he ate that was gluten-free and casein-free were potatoes. So I said, okay, we're going to do French fries made out of potatoes, like buy the potato, chop it up, add coconut oil and sea salt. So he ate that for about 3 weeks straight. He didn't eat anything else. He wouldn't eat anything else. But by 3 days, he started to say words again. Wow. So he started to recover some speech. And by this time, my mother had a friend, she has a friend still, and the friend works at the University of Chicago. I'm from Chicago. And Bennett Leventhal, this Dr. Bennett Leventhal, who's a psychiatrist, I think he's still alive. He ran like a center where people put their kids in an institution. And so my mother talked to her friend. She says, oh, you know, Carrie just got this diagnosis, you know, and I know that Bennett is the biggest guy in, you know, autism. He's the biggest guy in institutionalizing children with autism. So that's not something we want to do. But anyway, so I get a call with this man because he's friends of my mother's friend, the University of Chicago. So I get him on the phone and he's like, oh, I don't have an appointment for 6 months. And I said, oh, but, you know, I understand by this point, I'd already, you know, really done some investigation. I knew that time was of the essence and that there is recovery for some people. And time, like I said, the age, the younger, the better, the faster.
And so you had noticed the difference with the potato diet.
Exactly. I mean, the gluten-free, casein-free, and of course, in our case, it was just potatoes because they didn't eat anything else. So he was already saying words. So when I said to the doctor that I wanted to challenge him a little, not challenge him, but I wanted to see, you know, what he was made of. I said, well, I started my son on a gluten-free diet. And he said, oh, you don't have to do that. But if you want to do it, it doesn't really matter. And then I said, well, when's the nearest appointment for you? And he said, oh, 6 months from now. And I said, yeah, but, you know, time of the day. He says, it doesn't make a difference if you start now or you start in 6 months. And I was just, okay, thank you very much. And I got off the phone. I called my mom. Like, I would never see this guy.
This is a really important point. I mean, this is not just one in a sequence of things that happen. What you did is discovered the correlation between ordinary everyday lifestyle habits and so-called medical conditions. And the allopathic medical industry is saying none of that matters. That just ignore the correlation. Don't look at it. What drug do you need? And once the drugs do too much damage, what surgery do you need?
What's the business model? I mean, how is a business model curing something or recovering or healing somebody from something is a poor business model if you're in the business of drugs.
But I think most doctors are well-motivated people that I've met. And I don't think they realize this is not just for money. This is willing to hurt people for money and draw out the suffering and mask the real situation for money. So, you know, it's more than just they're making a lot of money. If they were making a lot of money telling you the truth, that wouldn't be so bad. But they're doing it by accentuating the suffering. This applies to a vast portion of the medical industry.
Yeah. And you cannot also, you know, put, because there's a lot of people that do wake up and they already have a medical degree and they're like, oh, those are bad. I don't do those anymore. Or this is good. And it's alternative B12 or diet or some supplements or whatever.
Those are people strong enough to break the programming.
Right.
And hopefully it's going to spread. But you encountered it. You proved it real early, even if the potato diet wasn't the final answer. I mean, you found out, wait a minute. The potato diet made a massive difference. No negative side effects, no drugs.
Right.
This is really meaningful.
Well, some people think that you have to have a wide variety of foods in a child's diet when they're sick. And actually, one of the things that I've noticed, Richard, and I have to tell you, I have a group of children that are doing the carnivore diet. Children with autism doing the carnivore diet, and there's 42 of them. And they're doing remarkably well. And I really think sometimes elimination diets where you're only eating maybe one or two different foods.
Well, yeah, people look at what you are eating. But a lot of times what it's really masking is the effective part is what you're not eating.
Right.
Which is so much garbage that people are used to, right?
But even some of the healthy things I found. So, for example, I'm not sure if you know who Dr. Russell Blaylock is.
Very well, yeah.
Okay, he's amazing. And I think a lot of his work is really overlooked. And I think that we really need to take a look at it. There's a book that he wrote in 1995, which is still cutting edge and nobody's talking about it. And he talks about glutamate. And he, you know, he talks about an the name of the book is Excitotoxins, the Taste That Kills. Yeah. And what he's talking about is glutamate. Now, you and I might know it as like the Chinese food stuff that makes your joints hurt and you feel tired and like and listless the next day. But it's also occurring naturally in foods like tomatoes, bananas, broccoli, cauliflower, and almonds, which I used to be a big fan of the ketogenic diet for autism because you get rid of all of the carbs and you're starving the candida and the parasites. But actually, foods like I just mentioned are
you
actually
eat all the ones you just mentioned.
Exactly, exactly.
But so which can be fine for most people.
Right, exactly. I mean,
they're not going to be killed by a banana.
No. But if you have a leaky gut, like is in the case of everybody with autism has a leaky gut, and then these certain chemicals or proteins are getting to the brain via the bloodstream. And like Dr. Blaylock wrote about in his book in 1995, excitotoxins, a taste that kills. So when it gets to the brain, this glutamate, even though it's naturally occurring in bananas and tomatoes and other foods like that, gets to the brain, it causes an excitotoxic effect on the neurons and kills brain neurons. So this is horrible stuff, especially if we're trying to, you know, recover somebody and we need as much brain power as we can get.
Right, right. Wow. So if you're on a mono diet, by definition, no matter what mono diet it is, unless it's a high glutamate diet, you're going to be eliminating that stuff.
Exactly. And I just, when I switched, and it was a book that I had on my shelf for about 15 years, one of the first books I ever bought, because he was really big in the autism conference areas about 15 years ago, sort of when I was still going to autism conferences. Uh-huh. And that's when I bought a couple of his books, but he's really light years ahead of even what's happening now. I think that so many doctors or practitioners in the autism community just, you know, you sit down with them, and I've been to probably 8 or 9 different ones, and they say, okay, are you on the diet? The diet? Like, yeah, we're on the diet. But, you know, you got to really look at what these children are eating and then see how they're doing. Like, we use something called an ATEC score. ATEC is Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist, which is ATEC. And it's a free test that you can do at autism.org. It was created by Dr. Bernard Rimland. He passed away in 2006, but he's the person that lit up the world by saying there's something wrong with our children and something happened to them. It's not the refrigerator mother. He was the first one to write a book about that in 1964. So he created this test, which is fantastic. And he was actually a retired military psychiatrist. Created this scoring system, and basically an ATEC of 0 to 10 would mean you don't have autism. So, you know, if you and I sat down and did the tests ourselves on ourselves, our ATEC would be 0 or 1 typically.
Okay. What kind of stuff is on that test? What's it
like? For example, there's 5 sections. One of the sections is speech. And the question will be, does your child speak 1 word? Yes, no, maybe sometimes. 2 words, yes, no, maybe sometimes. 3-word sentences. Does he speak for his age? This kind of thing, mostly.
Okay.
And then you go into the next one of like sleeps of the night, bathrooming, does it wear diaper, behavior hitting, social cues, pointing. So there'll be 5 different sections. And of course, the most important thing is to get to 0. That's where we're all trying to go. But it was created by Dr. Rimland, and he created also the Autism Research Institute in 1970, which was really just the beginning of a hub where he was putting together information. Because after he wrote the book Infantile Autism in 1964, he was bombarded with mail, you know, physical mail of people around the world saying, oh, my child has autism and I'm giving a gluten-free, casein-free diet and my child is better. I'm giving cod liver oil, my child is better. I'm giving magnesium with B6. And so he started to bring all this information together, and he started to get other doctors that were interested in learning about this and understanding that we've got a condition here and we can make it better with these things. And through that came many amazing brains together, not just Dr. Rimland, but he would have huge conferences. I went to one in 2005 and in 2006, and there were thousands of parents, like 10,000 parents. I went to one in Washington, D.C., and Chicago, and different places in the United States. It used to be more popular. Now there's a lot of online stuff, even though Autism One, I think, is at the end of this month, and that's going to be in Arizona.
When did people start realizing that the primary cause could be vaccines?
I think around the 2000s, kind of right around there. Dr. Okay. Wakefield is the one in 1998. Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and he was at the Royal Free Hospital, and he was a gastroenterologist, and he was a lab scientist. Mm-hmm. And they had this autistic enterocolitis, and you know, he would see all these patients coming in, and they have these distended bellies, and they're crying, and they don't sleep through the night, and all this kind of digestive problems. And so they did sampling from inside of the guts of I forget how many children, and he was able to trace that same strain of the measles virus all the way back to a petri dish. The MMR was the vaccine that he was able to cross-relate to a lab.
Right. And his conclusion, if I understand it right, was just asking the question,
right,
could it be related?
Right. Yeah. And he still stood by it. And I actually was in a call with him in Autism Awareness Month. It was a kind of a little round table thing. And he was like the guest. And there was about five or six of us that were present. Right. And somebody asked him a great question. Tanya, the lady who was doing the MC, she said, you know, are you ever afraid? And he, you know, he lost his ability to practice medicine. They took his license away. They took his passport. They took his citizenship away. He was born in UK.
This was in the UK that they did this.
Exactly. I think he lives in Texas now. I'm not really sure, but he definitely lives in the United States, but he's no longer a medical doctor. He's, you know, he's actually doing movies and important movies like Vax the movie. That was the first one. And then he came out with another one. I think it's called 1985 and or 1986. And so he's been doing movies now. He's actually working, I think, on one that's going to be in a big production, like, you know, kind of like one of those Paramount or Hollywood type things. But he's found, thank God he's found another, you know, a second lease in life on things that he likes to do. But, you know, telling the truth cost him basically everything. And that's what I think, you know, and what the question, what she asked was, you know, are you ever afraid? And he said something that for me actually is helping me to change the way I see things too, because they haunt you. I mean, as soon as you have some, like Gary Null said, you know, as soon as you have a cure for something or treatment for something, they haunt you. And that's really what it is. They haunt you. They make you miserable. They make you broke or they kill you. So something is going
to
happen.
I want this to really get through to people who are not familiar with this mechanism that's in place. No. The medical system we've got now, which does some really good things for people who get run over by cars and emergency medicine and trauma care and things like that. And the very few necessary surgeries, like for congenital birth defects and things like that. As far as disease and sickness goes, they're killing millions of people. And they're masking what's known as cures for so many things. In fact, I don't think you're supposed to say cure anymore.
You can't.
You're not supposed to say manage.
Right? Yeah, or a remission. That's it. It's in remission.
Yeah, remission. In other words, all right, it's about to come back.
Right.
In fact, that's common in the cancer industry, which is a big industry. Right. And they're saying, well, we're going to do this treatment with chemotherapy or something. So, you know, if you specifically know what to ask, they'll often say, well, yeah, it usually comes back in about 6 years or something like that, whatever the number is, which makes it a success if you make it through five before it comes back. But cancer has been cured a long time ago, and you're not supposed to talk about that either.
Right.
So it's a choice for society. You know, are we going to stay enslaved by the so-called experts that are being pressured to say certain things and not say other things? Or are we going to realize that people like you, who are the mother of an autistic child, had a breakthrough when you realized the connection with the potato diet that was beyond...
That sounds so bad, Richard.
That was beyond 99% of what the medical industry knew about.
Right. At least the ones I was encountering, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So Wakefield was a beginning of asking the question, I guess, of the correlation.
Right. He was the one that first documented this, and then it started to raise red flags. But the incidence of autism from 1998 just shot up exponentially. It was like one in 500. Right. And then it was like quickly one in 210, I think. And then my son's generation, he was born in 2000. And then he was, I think it one in 166. Uh-huh. So it was just, you know, up. And then now it's like one in 30 or 40, something like
right,
this.
Right. Right. And at this point, people are realizing vaccines seem to be the primary trigger, but there's right. contributing factors. You mentioned right. that they right. all have leaky gut. So eating anything with GMO ingredients or Roundup right. or anything like that would be a really bad idea, right?
Right. But also what we don't realize, and Dr. Roby Mitchell and different people along my path said, you know, there's a lot of things that created this perfect storm, because it was only the vaccine, then every child would have it. You know, every vaccinated child would have autism.
That's right.
And that's not the case. But we right. can look at other groups of people, like the Amish, for example, and they don't have autism in their community, or this little pediatric practice, which I think they had 20,000 like homeschooled kids, and they were all non-vaccinated and none of them had autism. So we can look at these groups. And of course, you know, they're never going to get the medical establishment to do an official study of the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, because obviously the unvaccinated would come out so much more healthy.
Right. The study's been done, just not by them.
Exactly.
Right. So what kind of things are being discussed in the Autism Awareness Month now compared to 20 years ago?
Well, right. The world that I live in, there's something called CommuSav, CommuSav.com. And it's a group of people that started about 2 years ago.
How do you spell that?
It's CommuSav.com
and CommuSav.
Right. There's, I don't know, there's thousands of doctors, there's attorneys, and then there's, you know, just individuals like us who were able to watch chlorine dioxide, what would you call it, put into remission COVID. So they started right. a group like this, and then it just grew and grew and grew through Latin America. That was really the biggest push point. And every other place with the mainstream mainstream news, they just shut it down. But it was really a big thing, because Bolivia actually wrote into law during the COVID pandemic that they were reversing COVID, even in people that were in critical care at the very end.
Yeah.
And the government of Bolivia gave away 2 Olympic swimming pools full of chlorine dioxide. And then, of course, Mike Adams and some of these other people are talking about it now more openly on their platforms about mm-hmm. how they took chlorine dioxide, or Bob the Plumber. And these, you know, these people are like going around, and Clay Clark, and these, you know, kind of these sort of the patriots are getting together with the alternative health group as well, and sort of pushing it through. So I think it's giving more light to it.
So what kind of events happen in Autism Awareness Month? I mean,
well, I think
so that you can say what happened during that time.
Well, what I see, for example, and what I was part of was a lot of different CommuSav events. So every Saturday there was a different talk. Like sometimes it was about treatment, sometimes it was a question and answer for the experts, and sometimes it was one that was just parents' recovery, their children recovered, and they were there saying how their child recovered, and some of them had their children present to say that they recovered. So wow. there was a lot of really cool stuff, but these are all people that use diet. I wouldn't call it really the potato diet, but I would say gluten-free, casein-free for sure.
Right.
And then, of course, chlorine dioxide. So those are like the key components to healing and recovery. And I noticed, for example, when I used to go to Venezuela back in 2011, 12, 13, so I would go March and October. So we used to do 2 conferences a year in Venezuela, and there'd be thousands of parents there. And I know one time, just between the first and the second conference that I did, we had about 40 kids recover. And they were on a pretty simple diet. I mean, it was, you know, we got rid of the wheat, we got rid of the dairy, but there were still a lot of foods in there that you would say, you know, might not be the best or the most ideal. And the kids still recovered because they were using chlorine dioxide, and we were doing things that were, you know, pro-health, gut sealing, pathogen killing, inflammation reducing.
So there's only really 2 things that the power structure doesn't want you to talk about with respect to diseases: the cause and the remedy, right?
Other I definitely don't want you to talk about the remedy, for sure.
Right. Well, the cause too, because those are big business things.
Right. Yeah, they will shut you down or make you pretty miserable.
Yeah. So it kind of relates to the situation in general in society right now in countries that don't have free speech, like America, for example.
Right. And, yeah. You know, well, the Facebook groups, I used to have 60,000 people in my Facebook groups and with 13 different languages. Right. And then one day to the next, Richard, they were just turned off. It was like sometime in February of 2019, we woke up and there wasn't one group there. I guess when I go and look for myself in Facebook, for example, I can see that I'm there, but there's nothing there. So I can't even access it. So it's just, they just leave them there. And it's really unfortunate, because Telegram is great, but it's not, you know, definitely not Facebook. And then, of course, I also sort of feel like, soured by the whole social media experience. You know, and a lot of people are not familiar with like Gab or some of the other ones that are much more American based than, you know, international, like Facebook is, you know, everybody has Facebook, you know, and internationally, right. But not everybody has Gab or Telegram, for example.
So what do you think came out of Autism Awareness Month this year?
Well, in my world, I think it was just more confirmation of the fact that autism is avoidable, treatable, and curable, even though we'll just say it's going to be remission.
Do you think it's remission or cure that's happening?
Well, I think it's cure because cure is the absence of disease. If you look it up in the Webster's Dictionary, it is the absence of disease. So when the disease
remission means you're going to get it again too.
Well, that's what I think, you know, but this is how they like us to talk. They don't like us to use that word cure. That will definitely get you taken off any other place.
You're not talking about the autism awareness people. You're talking about the mainstream industry, medical industry.
Right. A friend of mine, Dr. Roby Mitchell, rest in peace, he passed away a year and a half ago. Great man, a protector of the truth. And he put up billboards around Amarillo, Texas, and it said, "We cure autism." There was a picture of my book. There was a picture of my face. And then there was my email. And I used to have a Yahoo account. So he surprised me one day. He's like, "Look what I just posted all over Amarillo, Texas." And I looked at it. I said, "Oh my gosh." And within 12 hours, my email was gone. I had had it for 20 years. It was absolutely gone.
Email was given on the billboard?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But I didn't have my own server. Little by little, you start to realize what's happening is I lost my PayPal, I lost my Chase bank account. And, you know, as the stuff starts going away.
So most of these giant corporations are going along with the suppression.
Absolutely.
And they're full of good people working for them, but they don't realize the bosses are using them for some really bad ends.
Yeah. And I also think that we don't realize our power. And I think David Icke has been talking about this, you know, for decades now.
There's
power in numbers, but we, you know, as long as we stay sitting down, like my friend Mark Grennan said, I talked to him the other day, and he said he's sitting in jail because he used chlorine dioxide and was open about it. And he said, you know, if all of us would stand up, they couldn't fit us all in jails.
Yeah. Why don't you give a little bit of history for people that never heard of chlorine dioxide, where it came from?
So chlorine dioxide.
Jim Humboldt, Grennan.
Yeah. Chlorine dioxide has been around since the 1800s, and it's a prooxidant from the family of oxygen, ozone, chlorine dioxide, and hydrogen peroxide. So they all kill through oxidation, not chlorination. Like pools are chlorination. So that actually is toxic. But chlorine dioxide is a totally different molecule. And I think most medical professionals, when people will ask, "Oh, doctor, should I take chlorine dioxide?" No, it's chlorine. It's pool bleach, you know?
It's but bleach, it's, right.
Yeah, and that's sodium hypochlorite. So that's a whole other chemical, even though they can sound, you know, sodium, salt, you know? So they all sound sort of the same, but they're all so very different. So Jim Humboldt was a miner. He was mining gold in South America when the camps of miners were falling ill with malaria. And he had chlorine dioxide for water purification. You know, they sell them in camping stores. So you can just purify water on site and drink
it. Been approved for that for a long time.
It's been approved for many things. There's a lot of patents like mouthwash and different types. And there's hundreds of patents for chlorine dioxide with oral use.
So this must be really stressful psychologically for the controllers, because since they approved it, it's really hard to say it's poison.
Well, they say it anyway, but they don't mind contradicting themselves, but that's, and of course, I kind of fell in, like I bought some because this doctor, now in Mexico, Latin America, I was living in Mexico at the time, Latin America has been very open to alternative health for a long time. So I was at a pediatrician's office, you know, standard pediatrician, medical school, graduated, but he also did ozone therapy and chlorine dioxide as well. So I was talking to him, and this nurse came in with this box full of beautiful bottles. There were some like emerald green and sapphire blue, and being a woman, I'm like, "Oh, what are those?" And he said, "Oh, these are detoxification drops." I said, "Oh, I'll take some of those." So I'm like, "How do I do this? Put a drop with a drop and drink it." You know, I was like, "Oh, okay." And then I was $20 a bottle. And of course, I was not too impressed with $20. And he didn't say that it was for autism. He just said they were detox, as I thought, for myself. So I stuck them in a shelf and I never looked back. Another year passed.
Right.
And after that, my son had seen probably 8 or 9 doctors, had done extremely expensive treatments from IV chelation and stem cells and 5-6 different diets. And of course, a supplement known to man,
right.
Lots of different things. I mean, there's really nothing we didn't do. And then 2010, my son was about to turn 10 at the end of the summer. So June of 2010, I really prayed. You know, I used to beg, pray, but this was more like making a deal. Like, it's going to be difficult, but I'll still do it. And just kind of like that kind of concept. And then I had remembered about the chlorine dioxide. And I'll get those out and see what happens. So I put a drop with the drop and it activated. And I said, okay, let me see what the internet has to say. Now, back in the day, you could do a Google search and you'd actually get a search engine. It wouldn't be a propaganda tool. So
yeah.
I found chlorine dioxide and it destroyed the virus. It killed candida, bacteria, parasites, took down inflammation, reduced oxidative stress, neutralized heavy metals.
What year are you talking about?
2010. Summer of 2010.
There were testimonials all over YouTube.
All over. Oh my gosh. There was so much positive stuff. I would just read and read and read and read and read. And at that point, the father of my son didn't want to hear anything more about treatments because he was, tired of spending, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and getting really poor results. And of course, there's Patrick, taking all the supplements and eating all the foods. And anyway, so I was at my clinic. By then I had opened a biomedical clinic and I had hyperbarics and chelation and neurofeedback and therapies and all kinds of stuff. Doctors, nurses, psychologists, because I brought everything for Patrick to Mexico. So I might as well share it with other people. And that's basically what we're doing over at the clinic, a not-for-profit organization. And so I was there one day. It was like maybe late July, early August. And my son's birthday is the 12th of August. And he was about to be turning 10. I always try to start some sort of a new treatment around the time of his birthday so that I would feel more positive. This might be the year that he would recover. Sure. And so I go into the clinic and the people that were just coming out of my hyperbaric chamber were the cousin and his girlfriend of very close friends to the father of my son. And I said to them, oh, hi, how are you? And they said, we're taking chlorine dioxide. And that was like the weirdest response to, hi, how are you? Instead of being like more, well, anyway, so that was very strange. I'm like, oh my gosh, you don't know. I've been researching this for 6 weeks, but I just don't know how to bring it up. I mean, nobody wants to hear about what I'm thinking or what I'm seeing. And I see this to be really, really positive. Like, no, we'll come to the house and we'll talk about it and everything. So we all got to, we went, I'm like, okay, great. So we run over to the house and we're all talking about it. I invite the father to talk about it. And so we're all talking about it. And he says, well, we'll take it first. And if we don't die, then we'll give it to Patrick. And again, keep your expectations low. So that's pretty much what we're doing at the time. And we didn't die. So we started Patrick. And then that's when I contacted Mark Grennan, who Jim Humble was with Mark Grennan in the Dominican Republic. And they had like a little kind of a center, where people would come and they would get trained to use chlorine dioxide and they would share. Okay.
Just to keep up that strand of the story, you said that Jim Humble tried it out on some people with malaria in the jungle in South America.
Right. And so the people were recovering, then they went jungle to jungle and recovered people. And then some people over in Africa heard about it. So the Jim ended up jumping over to...
Malaria is considered incurable, isn't it? It's treatable.
Well, yeah. Millions of children are dying in Africa every year because of malaria.
Right. This is a really big deal.
Because
if we were living in an honest system, Jim Humble discovered would have spread all over the world.
And no child would die from malaria because the Red Cross with Leo Kayoff, rest in peace, in 2011 did a study. They did a study with the Red Cross. And you can still see it on YouTube, even though Red Cross denies it. So they just deny that it exists. But they did 54 cases where they took the test prior and then the next day. And they gave them some gift that they always came back because people came from, towns all around this area.
Was Jim Humble part of this procedure?
He wasn't, but Leo, because this is more recent. This was 2011. So Jim was already like up in age by this point. So other people were kind of doing his work. But Leo Kayoff, who has Jim Humble publishing in Germany. He was also close to Jim, but he went to, and I think it was Rwanda.
You said he's no longer living, right?
No, he passed away.
I talked to him. I invited him many years ago to come on the show about the malaria test.
Amazing.
And he said it was way too dangerous. He couldn't say anything about it.
Well, it's dangerous and it's not. I mean, the Red Cross just denies it, yet it still sits on YouTube. You can still look it up and you can see it on YouTube.
Right, but he had been threatened.
Of course, absolutely. No question about it. But they did 54. And it was literally the morning, you know, the first morning, everybody tested positive for malaria. And then 24 hours later, they only had one drink. They literally gave them, I think the adults got 6 drops and the little kids got 2 or 3 drops. And the next
in one glass of water.
Yeah, 1 glass of water. They took 1 sip. And then the next day they came back and all but one tested negative. And then the one who tested negative, they gave him 1 more dose. And then the next day he was negative too. So that was 100% in, you know, 24.
This should be like a brand new large scale newspaper should be created just for that result.
Yeah. And all these people that are so, you know, they're so like, oh, we're not racist. We're not. Well, then how come millions of children in Africa are dying every year from a curable malaria and nobody's up in arms about this?
If somebody, is there anything obtainable at this point about the results to that test?
Though just the YouTube, because, you know, the YouTube video that shows.
Okay, is it easy to find?
I will look for it after we finish talking, actually. I will look for that, because I've seen it actually recently.
Maybe if we're recording this, so maybe if you find it, we'll put the link in the description.
Sure.
Because this is really valuable.
It is very valuable. If everybody shared these type of things in their own circles, we would have a better diffusion of information because we cannot get it out into the media. There's no way.
So how does the chain go from Jim Humble to Mark Grennan then? How did they get together?
Mark also started to treat himself. And I think we all kind of came, me, Mark, Andreas Kalker, Leo Kalf, we came to Jim Humble basically with each one with our own separate stories. Because Mark had I think it was staph or something. And so he started to treat himself with chlorine dioxide because he found that.
Was that because he read Jim's book?
I think so. I kind of forget that a little bit.
Because that book is kind of still available, right?
Yeah, the little yellow one that he originally wrote. But Jim's written many books since then. And Mark has written a lot of books also more recently. But
there was a major big book called Health Something Protocol. What is it?
Yeah,
Health Recovery Guidebook or something like that.
Yeah, one of Jim's early ones.
Yeah. Okay, so Mark Grennan read the book probably and found out about it, started using it.
Exactly, and cured himself. And then he contacted Jim and said, hey, I've got this place. Because he used to do, I think it was Doctors Without Borders or something like this, because he had a property right next to Haiti, and he was a pilot. And so he used to fly.
What did he cure himself of?
I think strep, staph, something like that, something bad.
Some kind of infection.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, it was something that like nobody could cure him from.
Another incurable condition.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And he's vaccine injured too, because if you hear him, his voice sounds like he's kind of straining. And that was from he got paralyzed in the throat and the voice box, something of this nature, with the swine flu vaccine.
2009 or 10 or something like that.
A long time ago. Yeah, he had that happen. So he was already aware that there were some things. And he's got a large family and his kids are very healthy. All his grandchildren are very healthy. They're all non-vaccinated. But he's the one that actually answered my email to Jim, because I sent a message to this. They called it a church, but it wasn't a religious church. It was just trying to give protection to people using chlorine dioxide because many people had been hunted and had their lives ruined.
What country were they in?
Dominican Republic.
Okay. And I know the U.S., you know, in theory, protects religious practices.
Well,
but what about the Dominican Republic? Do they, or what's their attitude?
Yeah, nothing to do with the Dominican Republic because they're American citizens. So actually what ended up happening to the American citizens is that the U.S. government went after them, even though they were not living in the U.S. And they
what was it, the FDA or what agency?
FDA. Which is not even an agency.
So they went to totally Dominican Republic to attack.
Mark and his boys had since moved from the Dominican Republic, and Mark and one of his sons were living in Colombia, and some of his other boys were living in Florida. And so they went and raided their house, and they had chlorine dioxide there. And anyway, so now they've been in jail for 2 years without a trial.
Some of them in Colombia, right?
Mark is still in Colombia, but the three boys are boys. I mean, they're in their 30s, but the boys are in a jail in Florida. But again, I mean, Richard, what scares me as an American, or what really concerns me, or, you know, Jan 6th, I mean, we don't have to go too far. These people are in jail without trials. They're just in jail. I mean, what about our country? What about
our
freedom?
What are they charged with?
That's a very good question.
Or do they even have charges?
I'm not sure, because they don't even have a date for their trial. They're just sitting in jail.
Maybe they're terrorists, right? Because I think there are special laws on the books that say if you're a terrorist, you don't need any due process. But these are terrorists who had a church and didn't do anything bad.
Right.
And the church is supposedly protected. It is protected by the Constitution, the part of the First Amendment.
Well, we know that's gone now. I mean, there are freedom of speech is really out the window in our country, which is so disturbing.
This is an indication of a much bigger problem.
Absolutely.
Right. So is Mark Grennan is the one in prison in Colombia still?
Correct.
And his three sons are
in
Florida?
They're in a Florida jail. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the church he started, he has the position. What's his position? Deacon or what is it?
I don't remember. But
he's the head of it.
Maybe a archbishop or something like this.
Yeah, I think so. And then his sons are bishops or
something like this. I think it was just because this is the setup of a church, so they just went along like that. Basically, I believe that's kind of how they did it. And the idea is a really good idea. If in fact the laws would protect what is truly a church, because if you do have sacraments and you do have your Eucharist or whatever you call it, and it happens to be this without religion being behind it, and there was never any religion behind it.
Well, it's the belief,
that something is healing, right?
The way the exemptions are written for various things, you just have to have a sincere belief. You don't have to be tied to an official big, system of any kind.
Right. I think it was the Church of Health and Healing. I think that's so. It was really just about coming together for health and healing.
Yeah. There may be an exception if you start a church and the church is, has a sacrament that's a crime. Mm-hmm. But they weren't doing that.
No. Oh, no, the opposite of it. I mean, and actually, I went two times to the Dominican Republic, because the first time I went to say thank you to Jim, because the fact that he had walked so many years by himself, and the path is really, really difficult. And so when I went there were so many wonderful people there that, really wanted to help humanity. And I think that's the vast majority of the people that I met in the whole chlorine dioxide movement was their desire to help humanity to survive what we're being put through.
Yeah, it's more than just malaria.
Oh, way more than just malaria. And then you get to meet people who have recovered their health from, like Mark or Andreas had rheumatoid arthritis, or I watched, thousands of children recover from autism. So how do you stay quiet about that?
It also brings up really interesting questions. If there was real medical research going on, not just working for the drug dealers, they would be asking the question, why does one thing cure these apparently really diverse conditions?
Right.
Are they all parasite connected in some way, or what's going on?
Well, if you have an autoimmune disease, and what I've noticed is that almost everybody, without exception, has pathogen overload once the immune system's not working well, because it's kind of like anarchy. The bad guys, they multiply, divide, and go wherever they want to go. It's exactly the same as the streets of Chicago now. So there is no control anymore, and that's what's happening in the body. And then the more and more pathogens you get, the more oxidative stress you get, the more inflammation you get, and the more symptoms of disease you get.
Right. And this could be more widespread because of things like the use of antibiotics, right?
Well, I mean, and also glyphosate in our food, and the chemicals in our food, and
what's in the water.
What's in the water? What's
it's
in the
really,
air? Heavy metals.
It sounds that we're in a place where the truth sounds extreme, and we've been feeding on that teaching that don't have an extreme belief because then you're an extremist and a conspiracy theorist, and since people are losing their logic, maybe that makes you a racist too, and some other things. But the truth is pretty extreme when you really look at it compared to what we're being taught. And it's not safe to drink the water out of the tap. And it hasn't been for a long time.
Exactly. Distill if you can.
Yeah, distill or at least gravity filter or something like
right.
that.
Yeah, I'm a big distiller these days because you used to see the stuff that comes out of the water. It's just absolutely frightening.
In your filter.
Well, I use a distiller. So, I mean, I can see everything.
So you're steaming it, right?
I'm steaming. Yeah, I'm just getting just the water out of it. I'm not, everything else stays behind them, which take humic fulvic minerals by themselves.
Right, right. Amazing. So
yeah, it's frightening.
People have a choice right now. They can go along with the mainstream authoritarian dictates of what health is about, or they can take on the responsibility to educate themselves, right?
I think there's a lot of options still. You know, the more that I stay in this this realm, the more that I realize there's so many more options. And even about 3 weeks ago, a friend of mine, amazing lady, she actually ended up getting sick from a detox protocol, not mine, but another one that she was doing. And she went to the doctor and she got an IV of something I'd never heard of. And she says to me, "Hey, have you ever heard of methylene blue?" And I'm like, "What's methylene blue?" And I guess it's also been around since the 1800s. And they used to dye clothes, but then they found that it cured malaria. Wink, wink. I mean, what else do we know that cures malaria?
That's interesting.
And, yeah. And then, so the other day I've got this little program on Brighteon.tv that I do on Thursdays. I interviewed you one time as well. And I interviewed the author. His name is Mark Sloan. I'm not promoting necessarily him or his book, although I think that, as you can see, I got a lot of highlights in there. I think it's great book.
Is it a good book?
It is an amazing book. And this guy is sharp as a tack. He has about 5 books. If you go to his website, it's called endalldisease.com. His name is Mark Sloan. He's written books on baking soda, on red light therapy, on the cancer industry, cancer treatments. He has five books, and he's got a few that he gives away for free. And these are also not very expensive. I don't know what I paid for this, but maybe $12 or something. But I'd never heard of methylene blue. And it's kind of like one of those miracle treatments like chlorine dioxide.
Yeah, wasn't it originally used as a dye or something?
Right. In 1800, it was used as a dye. And it somehow they figured out that it worked for malaria. And then it was anti-pathogenic, and then it was working at the mitochondrial level. So it's kind of like the answer to our prayers. Because
was it one of those things that had no bad effects also?
Right. Yeah, there's no, I mean, the only time that you might feel, because it's letting go of nitric oxide. So sometimes if you have a lot of toxin in your body, you might feel bad if you start at full dose. And I think that's one of the things. People don't really know how to dose things. So they just start off at full dose. You got to die off, you feel bad. But if you start off with like a drop, you know, once a day, twice a day, this kind of thing, and you go up a little at a time, then you reach the full dose. Richard, this is like the first time I've been really excited, besides, well, of course, Dr. Daniels with her work with the turpentine, which is also very exciting, and chlorine dioxide. I think that those three pieces are very important besides diet. And you can have a few supplements or, you know, like black seed oil or humic fulvic or things like that, that you can use also with them. But I think tools, you know, to get to the mitochondria and actually in the brain, there's more mitochondria, and the brain needs more mitochondria. And one of the first things that methylene blue does is it goes where it's most needed first. Whereas like stem cells, you pay $30,000, they go wherever they want to go.
Right.
Methylene blue goes to the brain first. And if it's got autism, depression, Alzheimer's, cancer, heart disease, cognitive impairment, pain. I mean, when you read the book, you're like, oh my gosh, we all need this. And then when you see this stuff, it's dirt cheap also, like chlorine dioxide.
You mentioned IV, but it can be taken orally.
Orally. It drops, and there's even, if you get there's a few doctors that are prescribing it orally, you can get out of a compounding pharmacy.
Are there good and not good places to get it?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know which?
I can give you some, sure.
Yeah, give us links for that too.
Okay. But this is the first one that's really blown me away in a while. I mean, it's been a while.
Wow. Yeah, it makes me want to read it. I haven't read the book at all.
Oh, amazing. And actually, I was combing the internet. And there's actually not Google, of course, but, you know, go into actual search engines. Very good. And YouTube has quite a few videos about it. I mean, if you go into, and they talk about like all the benefits for cognition and cognitive impairment and how it fixes it.
Wow. Wow.
It's amazing. I've sent one to like everybody I love, like, you know, here's $30, enjoy it, you know, just take it.
Yeah.
Let me know when it arrives. So that's basically one of my new things. I mean, that's one of my most exciting things now. So, and the carnivore diet, I think I was mentioning that too. I have there's like 40 some kids. One of the moms started, I got into the carnivore thing back in November, started reading the books by Dr. Sean Baker, who I'm actually going to interview this week on my Brighteon channel. And it's basically like, you know, we were talking about the potato diet, as you call it. I mean, when you go into these mono diets.
It's what you're not eating.
Right, right. Exactly.
Which is almost everything.
Exactly, Richard. Exactly. 100%. So you're just having some steak, you know, some steak, butter. If you don't have, can't have butter, you have
meat. That means, you know, the vegetarians could eat the potato diet if they don't want to eat the meat.
100%. Right?
And they're still not eating almost everything.
Oh, now going back to this fellow, Mark Sloan, he was also talking, if you go to Brighteon.com, I have a little program called Champions with Carrie Rivera, and you put in Carrie Rivera, Mark Sloan, you'll come up with my interview last week. And he's writing a new book on PUFAs, which is that polyunsaturated fatty acids. And he talks about, you know, what I think many of us think is really healthy, like olive oil, avocado oil. I think there's a lot of us that think that those are good, which was me until last week. And he said, no, basically the only oils, the only fats that we should be having are coconut oil and butter. So that's he was saying that even like avocados, which I believe to be like the perfect food from God, you know, this avocado is like, it's got everything we need, minerals and potassium. Yeah. He actually said that it has a lot of these polyunsaturated fatty acids and it's actually not good for you, causes inflammation, causes, you know, this kind of stuff. So he's putting out another book soon. So his books are great. And like I said, they're short reads and they're just full of content and great footnotes.
The other thing that people haven't realized a lot is that when you talk about an oil like butter being good, it is. But if you can get it without heating it, it's miraculously better. And there are a few sources of raw dairy products, including butter, that change from disease-causing once they're pasteurized to incredible health foods. And there was, and this is unknown to the vegans because they think anything from dairy is the worst thing in the solar system and maybe the galaxy. But there was a sanitarium in Los Angeles, which used to be a wonderful health retreat area before it was built up. And that sanitarium, they took people off everything. They put them on a mono diet of raw milk, which the vegans would say, oh my God, you're going to kill them all. They cured everything of everybody that came there.
Mono diet. It's what you're not eating.
It was a mono diet. And they were trying to find somebody with cancer. This was 1890. Oh. But there was nobody with cancer, so they couldn't try it out on that. But everything else was cured. Amazing. Charles Sanford Porter.
Wow.
And you can get that book still. Wow. It's a mimeograph of his old notes.
Wow.
Really interesting.
Amazing.
So this mono diet idea, you know, we're told that if we don't get the, you know, 75 essential nutrients and major food groups every day, you know, forget it, you're toast.
Right.
Right. It's not necessarily true.
No. And then especially when people have, I have sat down with so many different people that have Lyme disease, multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. And I ask these people always.
All incurable.
Yeah, all incurable. And you talk with them and I say, they ask me, well, do I have to do a gluten-free diet? And I say to them the same thing. What foods don't make you feel bad? And almost inevitably, they'll say to me, well, I did carnivore. I don't know what you think about it, but I feel better on carnivore. And that was like every like second appointment that I had with somebody, they would pretty much tell me like carnivore was the best one that they always felt best on.
But they were addicted to things that made them feel not good too, right?
Well, I think that, you know, well, of course, but that was the foods that made them feel good. So of course I would say to them, just eat the foods that don't make you feel bad. That's the most important thing when you have chronic illness.
Your body knows. That's a huge breakthrough to just do that. It's like common sense is the most mysterious thing that people can't get to, right?
But we as people, we need somebody to give us permission. Like that's why when I talk to families, I give them permission to recover their child. You can recover your child.
Right. And you're kind of an authority figure because you've written books and you've given talks and you've done all these conferences. And I think people want somebody with authority to just tell them it's okay.
Right. And I get emails like after I'll do an interview with you, for example, I'll get people saying, thank you for what you're doing. Oh, by the way, I have a question. Where can I get to this or that or whatever? I'll get some nice things. And then it will never fail. Like one person out of like, you know, maybe 300 emails will be like, you're a terrible person. You're murdering people. It's like, listen, if there were dead people from chlorine dioxide, if there was one dead person from chlorine dioxide, they would still be talking about it.
If there was one verifiable sick person from it, it would have been world news. I saw you on Canadian TV And they exposed who you really are. Oh. And what they said is that you lead a cult, you know, kind of like Jim Jones, but slower. And that you advocate pouring bleach on babies. That's your sacrament.
That's so horrible.
It's amazing. And the people working for these networks, news networks that promote this stuff, they're causing death and preventing people from getting help that they need. You know, so to anybody that's within that industry, you know, I'm glad they have a job and are getting money, but they need to figure out some way to make up for the damage that's being done.
Become
a whistleblower or, you know, do something within your position that makes a difference.
Right. Well, like Mark said, I mean, they cannot put us all in jail. So if we just all stand up and keep talking and, you know, keep pushing it out there, it might change.
It gets back to what you were saying about David Icke, you know, peaceful mass noncompliance.
Right.
It's really hard to stop it if one person stands up.
Right.
But if a lot do, things change.
Right. And that was one of the things that I always had trouble with, because the parents, even though their kids were recovered or almost recovered, they would be fearful to speak because the trolls would hunt them down. And in the U.S., they're very adapted at using CPS. One of the trolls even sent me a police officer to my door. And then my husband answered the door and the fella says, we got a call that your wife's giving your kid bleach.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't they forget about the whole thing? Why don't they, first of all, ask the person who's calling, who are you and how would you even know that this person who doesn't have any criminal record is harming her son with bleach?
This anonymous system of complaints is really damaging.
Exactly. That's what I said. I mean, my argument was, what if I call my neighbors? We're the worst neighbors. Call my neighbors and I say, okay, he's doing elderly abuse on his wife.
Right.
Well, are they going to go and knock on their door and say, ooh, are you beating your wife? They wouldn't do that. You know, I mean, and they shouldn't do that. They should be, you know, checking out who is the person calling.
Right.
Anyway.
So it's really at a crossroads of individual empowerment right now, right?
Yeah, we really have a choice to make now, I think. And if we don't make it soon, there's no stopping it. I think that even I'm not very optimistic, so I don't think there's really going to be a stop anyway.
At the moment, it doesn't look really favorable.
It doesn't look good.
On the surface.
It doesn't look good.
It's going to need a change in consciousness. It's beyond just having to memorize the right things.
Right.
The common sense has to come back.
Right. And, you know, Mike Adams calls it meritocracy. And I think that that's what we, you know, the smartest, the most beautiful, the strongest, the brightest, like all these things were attributes that we were all trying for. You know, that I don't think any of us ever set off to be like these, you know, ugly, scary, monster looking people that we see, you know, on TV all the time the whole, you know, whatever the new ideal is, it is something we didn't grow up with. And I don't want to age myself, but I'm already could be an ARP member. And I mean, you say to yourself, well, our generation wasn't like that.
You know, besides the aging yourself, this whole belief system that we have without really looking at it, that by getting old, you have to fall apart or not be able to think anymore or be weak or not be athletic or anything. Why? I think that's all abnormal.
I have to brag. My mother's the coolest 80-year-old woman ever. First of all, she's so vain. She will not even answer a WhatsApp phone call without having her lipstick on. And she's always like ready to go. And last night they had a party, like her friends were in town. They have a in-town place in the building where my mother and her friends live. It's a large building with a lot of apartments.
Right.
And they had a dinner party, and the two people having the dinner party were both 80. My mother's 80. Her other friend is 80. And then he's got another friend that's like 68, another one 75, and then another one around 45, you know, but these 80-year-old fabulous diners, and they like partied on until 1:30 in the morning, you know, just having cocktails and chatting.
Lots of energy.
They're so cool. So I think that there's 80 and there's 80.
Yeah. And, you know, some of it is physical habits. Some of it is attitude. They kind of go together, right?
Exactly.
But for the people that are watching that have autistic kids and want some hope, and the doctors have been telling them, number one, deal with the fact that it's incurable, that it's never going to get better. Quit everything you're doing so you can take care of the kid who's going to keep getting worse. I mean, the message to them is really important, right? If they're willing to look outside the box.
How can you give up on your child? I mean, it doesn't matter what the diagnosis is. Like Dr. Roby Mitchell, rest in peace, said, if you're not born with it, you don't have to die with it. So in most cases, something that you picked up along the way, you can usually reverse it.
Right. And maybe some things that you're born with. Because what if you came out extremely toxic from something your mother was doing?
Mm-hmm.
It's still, you know, it's worth a try.
It's always worth a try. And it's just about the parents have to be motivated to do it. Because right. I see there's parents that are just like, nah, you know, that's too much work, that diet. And they just, you know, go on with the pizza and ice cream and the other stuff. It's just too much work for them. But, you know, I also believe that everybody has their own path to walk.
Right.
And mine was always going to be to help heal my son from this vaccine injury that we didn't know better. Nobody right. in my family knew better. We didn't know. And like my elder son one day when I was crying, he used to cry all the time. And he saw me crying and he was maybe 9 years old at the time. And he said, are you crying again because of Patrick? And I said, yeah. And I'm so frustrated that, because I remember the day that I walked him, like that last vaccine, it was really the one that pushed him over. It was the summer of 2002.
Yeah.
He was about 22 months old. And he said, you didn't know. And if you had known, you wouldn't have gone.
That was wise.
That was really wise. And
for a 9 year old,
those words stayed with me until this day. They still stay with me because it's true. I would never harm my son. I mean, the opposite of it for your children. Well, for my children, I did everything. I mean, I was the mom who would like double seatbelt all the kids in the back of the Voyager minivan and take like all the kids to the beach on Friday because my son, Patrick, I wanted him to always be able to be with the other kids. So I couldn't just have another mom take my older son and then Patrick wouldn't be with the other kids. So I would take all the kids to the beach, all the kids to the pool. So I always had a lot of kids with me. And that was, you know, that was my being their mom. That was everything.
What are you doing now as far as work and services and consulting and stuff like that?
Well, I've written some books and I have a Brighteon.tv show every Thursday at 10 a.m. live. And then it gets updated and archived into Brighteon.com. It's called Champions with Carrie Rivera. So I interview all the cool people that I like. And I also do consultations. People like to ask me questions. And I also can set up protocols that fit people because everybody's got kind of a different story.
Yeah. At this point, it's still considered acceptable to do consulting.
Right.
Because you're not prescribing really, right?
It's the same thing. I could pull out a deck of tarot cards, you know, I mean, whatever it is, you know, people can pay me for my, they seem to be valuable information.
Right. Your opinion on anything, basically.
Exactly. And that really is what it is. I have a mom and she talks to me about once a month and I sort of feel like I'm her psychologist because I'm just somebody to talk with. Cause she says, you know, in my country where I live, nobody else has a child like mine or the people that do, their kids are much better off than mine. And she feels very alone. And that has been kind of a position that I've sort of played in her life just to kind of keep her sane.
And the idea of whether you have a degree in something is so irrelevant. You know, if your life experience makes you qualified for something, that's what you're good at, even if the system doesn't recognize it.
Right. Well, and somebody can pay you for your opinion. I don't have a sign outside my door that says doctor is in. You know, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a homeopath. And I don't really practice homeopathy because as I was finishing my degree in homeopathy, I'm, you know, like $50,000 in and, you know, two and a half years in, I'm like watching this chlorine dioxide recovering kid after kid. And literally 2-3 weeks before my graduation from homeopathy school, after 3 years, my book was released about chlorine dioxide. It had nothing to do with homeopathy whatsoever.
Yeah, homeopathy is basically saying that if chlorine dioxide, well, they're not wanting to dilute the cure, they're wanting to dilute the essence of the disease, right? I mean, that's
and then succuss it into it has more potency, the further back you get. But when it comes to chlorine dioxide, it just was for me so clear, you know, and homeopathic tincture of chlorine dioxide didn't do what the chlorine dioxide does.
Can you say something about the back when there were testimonials on YouTube, which I saw hundreds of those? Can you say something about the range of things that people said were cured?
Well, everything. I mean, if you say like someone says they're cancer. Well, actually, I watched somebody. It was a child with autism, she did really, really well with my protocol. The mom would contact me. The dad got a prostate cancer. He was in his like maybe late 40s, early 50s. Uh-huh. He started doing just 3 drops 8 times a day. He never did enemas or anything like that. And his PSA went back into normal range within those, I think it was like a February to like a May or something. It was a very short period of time. And so, you know what, Richard, also, if you go back to the work of Dr. Hulda Clark, which she said, basically, you know, Candida kind of causes everything from HIV to...
I remember that, yeah.
Uh-huh. So if you start to think about cancer and being a fungus, for example, and this dad took the chlorine dioxide and his PSA went back into normal, why was it altered? Was it really altered because they had cancer? Was it altered because we got rid of some of the pathogen?
Right. That was what Simoncini was working on, that Dr. Simoncini from Italy was saying that cancer was actually fungal.
Right. And he uses, I think, baking soda.
That's right. Often injected.
Right. Don't try that at home, I think.
No, don't. I've seen that actually fail on people.
Oh.
But not to do anything bad to them, but their hope was on that. And, you know, it didn't do anything.
Cancer is a multifaceted disease. I think it's even more complex, but it's probably one of the most complex because a lot of the people are having emotional issues as well. And
almost all of them. Yeah.
Almost all of them. Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but it is something that you really can almost factor that in. And you know, if you're doing everything right and they still pass away, then there was something else going on.
You know about Hippocrates Health Institute in Florida?
Yes, I've heard of that many times.
I've interviewed a lot of their ex-cancer patients that were cured. You know, the worst cancer is pancreatic and everything that was advanced. 15, 20 years later, they're fine. And one of the things that they tell people who come there is, look, you can do this protocol. And with them, again, the protocol is eliminating most foods, and they give them green juices and raw salads and stuff, which eliminates almost everything. And they all get cured. But what they tell them is, if you keep this attitude, this really cynical, bitter, angry, you know, resentful, frustrated, self-incriminating attitude, you're not going to get better. So you can either drop that, you know, or just, you know, not either, just drop it if you want to get your life back. Which doesn't cost any money. Anybody can do that. They understand it. So if people want consultation, which sounds to me to be really valuable, how do they do that?
They go to my website. They can go to carrierivera.com, or they can email me at carrie@carrierivera.com above my head. And a lot of people just ask me like, hey, where do you get your chlorine dioxide? Or, you know, well, and for instance, I haven't lived in the United States in 30 years, but I know people that buy stuff in the States. And I'm sure a lot of people that are watching your shows and everything are from the US. So right. I can tell people pretty much where, you know, other people are getting it from. Cause I think Amazon is a bad place to get chlorine dioxide. I'm always afraid of a false flag operation. Yeah. You know, that scares me. But if you get
selling the batch that they know is going to hurt people.
Exactly, Richard. So that's why I think it's a good idea, when especially when it comes to these alternative practices, to use the ones of the road most traveled.
Okay, so where do people find those sources?
Well, they can email me, or there's three, like kvlab.com. They're out of Florida. There's another one called onenesslabs.com. I don't know where they're out of, but they come in glass, which I think are lovely.
Right.
And there's another one called waterpureworld.com. So those are three companies in the United States that I know people, thousands of people that are using those particular companies.
Okay, and we've got people listening in Australia, England, Europe.
Europe is easy. That one is power-cds.com, and they carry a lot of different, they carry CDS as well as the classic chlorine dioxide.
Okay. And what about Australia and New Zealand?
There used to be one, I forget the name. I will, if somebody's from Australia and they're listening to this, just email me. I'll find it. It's somewhere here on my desk. I just don't know exactly where it is, but there's definitely a distributor there.
You know, if people find out the value, this thing about consulting, you know, the value of consulting with somebody like you is your unique experience and the fact that you're willing to look at it and draw conclusions from common sense. And people need the encouragement and connection with that. So I think that's really important. But if people start to realize how important that is, you're going to have to start teaching replacements of yourself.
that's something we're going to work on this year, actually. What concerns me, though, also, is that once you say to somebody that, okay, this person is trained by me, so now they can represent me.
No, also because they might say anything that you don't even know about.
That's one of the things. But the other thing is that with what I do, there comes also some intuition. There comes, you know, 18 years of experience.
Exactly. They can't mimic your experience.
Right.
I don't know what the answer to that is.
I'm not just about chlorine dioxide. I'm also trained in all the biomedical interventions from Dr. Rimlin, because I met him before he passed away, and he allowed me to be trained because I had a clinic in Puerto Vallarta. It was the only biomed clinic in Latin America at the time. I had doctors, nurses, and psychologists, and he allowed me, amazing man, to be trained with the other doctors and clinicians, as they called them. So there were homeopaths there too, as well.
We're going to have to figure out some way to bring up a new generation of health teachers, and they're going to need the experience from somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to train. I would love to train because I think that there's, and then of course have an ongoing contact. So for example, when I do a consultation, the people then stay communicating with me on a regular basis. They have a separate text type talk with me open all the time. I use that 7 days a week. So I'm supporting the people without any extra fees, which is, you know, there's somebody basically doing my protocol with people with another disease. I'm not going to mention it, but they're charging $4,000 just for people to work in that kind of environment of other people. I think that's unbelievable.
That restricts it to a really small clientele.
But also, I don't know, karmatically, I think that's bad. I'm not sure. I don't want to judge, but I mean, if somebody's sick, and most of the people that I have the opportunity to work with, they've pretty much spent every cent on their illness by the time they looked into it.
If there was a way we could figure out how to do all this stuff for free, I think that would be the ideal.
Absolutely. The only thing is hard to keep, got a child to feed and some of the real things that I have in my life.
I don't know how to do it, but maximizing the gain, way out of proportion is not the best approach, I think.
Yeah, that's why I've come up with different things, different models for people. So for instance, I answer every email that I get. And unfortunately, my name is blocked on many servers like Hotmail, Yahoo, AOL, SBG Global. So these are always bouncing back to me. Hotmail, they're always bouncing back. So
incredible.
I urge everybody just to get a ProtonMail account if you can't have your own server. I mean, at least
Gmail has been... Proton's
the best. Gmail still gets through. But, I answer all my emails for free. I'm happy to help. I'm happy to send people in the right direction. And some people, they really do need to do a consultation. I cannot take, some people send me, emails that would take me probably 25 minutes just to go through each line and say what I thought. And still, you can't get the full case. I'm a homeopath. I'm trained to take cases. So I also need certain information in order to make
talking us a lot faster for transferring information.
But you need that back and forth, because in each one of those lines, there comes another question that I cannot remember the email and go back to it days later. So it is very, you wouldn't go to a doctor and just call the doctor on the phone and say, oh, my, I got this, like, this lesion on my foot and it's brown and pussy. And he's going to need more information. It's not just a one line email. So it's nice to get an opportunity to actually talk with the people about what's going on. And sometimes it's pretty simple. Like, let's start with this, then text me, let me know how that's going. Then we add this and,
Are there projects coming up that you're kind of looking to start in the near future?
I'm still doing the Brighteon.tv in English. I'm starting it in Spanish as well. So I'll have two hours a week, one in English, one in Spanish, which is exciting because I think that I think that Latin America is light years ahead of the English speaking world in alternative treatments, because they've always been alternative. Remember, there isn't the money that there is in the United States. For example, the US is, the one country in the world where healthcare is out of sight financially. But in Latin America, many people don't have the money for any kind of health treatments that are coming out of a hospital.
So you think it wasn't the incentive to take it over was missing? Because there wasn't enough money.
They can't get everybody. Where the U.S., by the Obamacare and this and that, they somehow managed to loop everybody
in. Everybody's captured by the insurance industry, basically.
And try to find some alternative treatment practitioners in the states, unless you're in Arizona, maybe, in Sedoma or something.
Yeah, but none of them are covered by insurance.
Exactly, and frighteningly expensive.
Yeah. Well, I hope people get in touch with you. And if they just want to follow your show. That's on brighteon.tv once a week.
Exactly. And I'm going to start putting that onto carrierivera.com so that people can even go there if they have a hard time finding it in Brighteon. Because Brighteon can be a little bit challenging sometimes. If you don't type it in exactly how it is, then you won't get exactly what it is. You know, sometimes I put my name in with my, like if I put in Carrie Rivera, Richard Sachs, sometimes I won't get our interview. I have to put in Champions with Carrie Rivera, and then I put in Richard Sachs or whoever my, you know, Mark Sloan or whoever my guest was. So I'm going to start putting those into carrierivera.com also.
Okay, good, good.
People can find, but any questions, I'm super happy to answer any questions, you know? Because I think some people just want to, you know, like, where do I get that? What was that, that link again?
You're basically still human.
Right, exactly. And I answer all my emails. Some people say, I emailed you months ago, you never answered me back. Maybe it's blocked. I mean, sometimes people, you know, their servers are blocked. So sometimes I don't even get those emails.
I would expect Gmail to be at some point screened and eventually blocked.
No questions. Yeah. Google. Why wouldn't
it's owned by Google, right?
Exactly. So that's why everyone just got to go Proton.
And I mean, what is it? Google. $5 every so
free.
Often.
Free.
They have an option though.
That's but mine is free. I have a free one. And then every once in a while, I have my IT guy go in and just clean out the box that, you know, would get clouded.
Okay. Yeah, because it's not infinite storage or something.
Right. No. But I just have them cleared out once every few months. And I don't use it a ton, but I have a...
And everybody can get Proton Mail.
Everybody can get Proton. They can get it for free as well. And they're just, you know, there's none of those pop-ups. There's no, you know, they're not trying to sell you shoes or anything.
No, it's
like that.
Very good. And if you have another email that you look at most of the time, Proton Mail will tell you that you've got incoming mail.
Right.
In case you're not looking at it.
Yeah, it pops up too, because I also never really check it. But I do check it because I do get mail there. A lot of people send it to my Proton as well.
Well, I hope we can stay connected with you and get updates on what you're doing. And, you know, it's almost like there's a informal alliance of people who have good motives and just want to help humanity and help life and help the world. And the more we know about each other, the better.
Absolutely. It's always nice to be able to cross over. And I think that if anybody is in Arizona, Autism One conference is, I think it's the end of May. And also if people are interested in they have autism and they're interested in any of the interviews that I did or any of the presentations that I did for CommuSav.com, they're still on the CommuSav. They have a video library site, so you can go and watch the back issues. But this past month we had testimonies from parents. It was very exciting. I mean, I was actually, my assistant was the one that organized many of my recovered kids and their parents. And just to sit there and watch these families say thank you was like really, really touching. And to watch
CommuSav.com, right?
CommuSav.com, exactly. It's .com. And they have everything that they do. And every Saturday they have interviews and presentations, and then they upload them to their video library. And I recommend people to go there as well and check out some of those things, whether it's autism or cancer. I think this month they're doing cancer. So, you know, people to get in there and, you know, get the information. You can always buy you know, people say, oh, chlorine dioxide is illegal in the U.S. No, it's not illegal. You can buy it.
No, it's a water purifier.
Exactly. So it's not illegal.
It's approved to drink. That's about as safe as you can get. Right?
Exactly. And of course, there's hundreds of patents for oral use, whether it's, you know, mouthwash, mouth rinse, dental products.
Right. Yeah, if it were bleach, that wouldn't be the case.
Wouldn't be the case. Well, that bleach is sodium hypochlorite. Every chemical has their own compound.
Yeah, yeah. When is the Autism One conference in Arizona? Do you know?
I think it's next week.
Okay, but
just go autism1.org. If anybody would like to go or they're in the area, there's going to be many people speaking. I'm not speaking. They're only having people speak in person. And since I don't live nearby, I will not be speaking, but it would be nice.
Yeah. 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 Sounds good. Okay. Well, we covered a lot. That was great.
Well, thank you for having me, Richard. It was really nice to be able to share a bit of what's going on in my life. And like I said, the new stuff for me is, you know, this carnivore and the methylene blue. These, I think, are some exciting stuff. And I hope to come back in 6 months and tell you that my kid has recovered after 22 years.
Yeah. For the missing link, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Because you've never really used methylene blue for anything before.
Never ever have I used methylene blue. I'd never even heard of it until 3 weeks ago. Wow. That's why when this lady says to my friend, she says to me, Carrie, they did an IV of methylene blue. I'm like, you know, frantically in the internet going, what is this stuff? And then when she got the book and she started to send screenshots, I mean, it was for autism. And then when I got into the autism section, I mean, it just makes sense that this can really make a difference at any age.
It's incredible. And more or less no negative results from it at all.
There can't be. There cannot be. The only thing that makes sense to me is that when you're getting rid of nitric oxide from the body, that there can be some sort of a detox reaction, but that would be more on the line of Herxheimer's and not like a side effect.
So right. It doesn't mean that it's damaging you.
Right, exactly. And I think that if we just were to start off lower, because a lot of people say, well, I'll start off with, you know, 20 drops and then go to 20 drops twice a day. Why don't we just start off with one drop twice a day and go up low and slow? You know,
basic principle.
Exactly. Low and slow always wins.
Avoid the problems.
That's what I'm going to try doing and see.
We need to get so much of this valuable information available to everybody. It makes me think someday maybe they could start a country based on individual freedom. And they could have like this document, like a Bill of Rights and maybe a constitution, stuff like that. It would be an incredible country.
Well, I was wondering too, maybe they're going to do like the Republic of Texas or something. We all just go live there.
That could happen.
Although I think it could happen too.
It's a struggle for control of each one of those states right now.
Yeah, that's true.
But the more people get conscious, the better the outcome.
That's true. So, I guess there's a couple of states that are good to be in, like Texas and Florida at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully more.
Right. My friend was saying, I was talking to a friend of mine and she's originally from Puerto Rico and she has property in Puerto Rico. And she said that she's not going right now to Puerto Rico because she's not vaccinated. Her children are not vaccinated. And if they were to have anything like a broken or, you know, sprained ankle or broken arm or something like that, just a, you know, regular thing, they will not let you in the hospital without getting a vaccine first.
That's true in a lot of parts of America too.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard stories from people who say that they have managed to resist it. But they try to vaccinate you for anything.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. We need a few things improved. But hold on, I'm going to say goodbye in the break here.
Thank you.
So there goes Carrie Rivera, you guys. I thought she was great. I hope you enjoyed it and got a lot out of it. Seemed like there was so much information shared that you might even want to listen to parts of that more than once. Only certain channels we can put it on. A lot of it's unacceptable from the mainstream point of view, but I think you hopefully get a lot out of it. Remember that her website is carrierivera.com, K-E-R-R-I-R-I-V-E-R-A.com. And she also mentioned the site that you want to know on Brighteon TV, Champions with Carrie Rivera. So you go to brighteon.tv and search for that. And all the archives are up there too. That's a great resource. And she said she just interviewed this guy named Mark Sloan, who was the one who was promoting methylene blue that she's still in the process of learning about. That's new to me too. I mean, I've heard of it and it's been talked about by some of the really good guests we've had, like the nurse Michelle Rowan and other people like that. But I know next to nothing about it. So I'm going to get the book that she mentioned, which is just, as I understand, called Methylene Blue, M-E-T-H-Y-L-E-N-E, Blue by Mark Sloan, S-L-O-A-N, who has a site that she mentioned as being really another valuable resource, and alldisease.com, which I'm going to start looking at too. And let's see, what was the other? I got so many notes here. Can't read my writing. ComuSav, I think is what it says. ComuSav.com is an autism site that has a lot of good information and resources on it that you guys might want to look at. And remember that people who are dealing with trying to help their kids with autism, when there's a lot of those now with the vaccines being mandated all over the place and all the other environmental issues that increase autism. If you can, getting a consultation with Carrie Rivera could be super valuable. And that's carrie@carrierivera.com for the email. just somebody of her stature and experience with autism and with chlorine dioxide and with all these diets and mono diets and other protocols that helped. She's one of the most experienced people in the world that has had the experience of healing so many kids with autism, either completely or to a great degree. So I recommend getting in touch with her and watching her site and her videos and her programs on Brighteon.tv. I think that's about it. We're at lostartsradio.com, as you know, and we have a lot of information up there. As Carrie and I were talking, we have more than you could ever get through, but we put up new videos and articles almost every day that are free educational material. And then if you want to help us stay on the air and keep bringing these completely unacceptable guests to your attention with no commercials, there's a donate button, and that would really be helpful because, as I've said before, I don't know how to do this totally without money. That's on lostartsradio.com. There's also a Subscribestar link there, and there will shortly be a Bitcoin link. If you want to donate Bitcoin, we'll use that to keep operating too. And share the links on channels that will not censor it. That would be great. What else? The bottom line is the world needs help right now, as Carrie was saying, and she continued talking after the show. Even worse than the autism epidemic is the insanity epidemic. And it's really, it's not just out of control. It's almost universal. It's like living in a giant mental hospital where the staff and the patients are both all insane. And if you have some sanity and realization of who you are, that you don't have to go along with the insanity, you're the hope of the world for spreading whatever we can do to make sanity contagious again and bring back common sense to the point where it becomes common. You are actually the potential spark for that. So take care of yourself. Learn all you can of natural healing on all levels. And be aware of the thoughts and emotions you carry around. They're really powerful. Usually people are scattered and careless, and they just let the mind chatter go in all directions, and they waste potential huge impact that you could be having on everybody else, even when you're not talking. So pay attention. Take care of yourself. Find out what you can become is really what you are. See how much of that you can get back, and we'll work on it together. If you want to join us on organized forum for doing that, planetaryhealingclub.com, you can take a look at that. Stay in touch on the contact form on the site. But mainly, take care of yourself and become the best that you can be. It's your natural state. And we'll look forward to seeing you here next time. Take it easy.